Bună ziua, doamnelor și domnilor! Suntem la episodul 5 a podcastului Prepare for Future. Eu sunt Alex Curtila, suntem în studioul Agora și acest podcast apare cu ajutorul suportului Agenției Elvețiene pentru Dezvoltare și Cooperare. Astăzi vorbim despre Web3, anume prin perspectiva educației și alături de mine este Meg Riordan, Chief Learning Officer la Possible Zone. Acest podcast va fi în engleză, așa că să știți, discuția noastră este axată anume pe limba asta. Let me introduce you real quick. Thank you for coming. According to your LinkedIn bio, which I like to read about people because mine sucks, so I want to find that one LinkedIn bio that I can steal. You are a strategic organizational builder with deep expertise in shaping vision and creating systems and structures to support impact. We'll get to that, like, in English terms, what that means. Activating Web3 learning experiences as a lever to increase opportunity and access. So what are the current limitations of education in the current era we live in?
Well,
good opening question.
I mean, potentially that could be its own sort of like course of study over the year. But I mean, I think the limitations are a cost of education, are the time frames that we have put parameters around in which students are able to learn. Location is also another limitation. And choice is another limitation. And so, you know, if we think about those things, if we think about the cost of education, so for a lot of people pursuing, whether it's higher education or like choice-based courses, the cost is prohibitive. So they don't
especially
have,
in the U.S.
In the U.S. Location. So if I'm interested, for example, in studying something that might be located in a different geographic area, I might not be able to have access to that if I live in a particular place and I can't afford travel to another area.
Even if you like living in Kansas, why would you have to move to New York, right?
Exactly. And so, you know, so those are a couple. Also the opportunity in terms of the kinds of choices we make. So, you know, you and I were just talking a little bit earlier and you were indicating that here that oftentimes students have limited choices in terms of the course of study that they pursue, or they have a choice between maybe two options. But actually there's a wealth of opportunity to study different subjects. And so how can we have more sort of interest or passion-based opportunities? Those are a few things that I think are limits to education. And then, I think currently our system is designed to produce, a system is designed to produce the outcomes that it gets. And so our system is designed to produce people who are part of that system. Good at remembering things, good at sort of contributing in a particular way, good at sort of perpetuating and replicating the kinds of things that have been in place.
So creativity would be the key, right? We want you to be different. We want you to be weird in your own way. If at the end of the day you will learn math, what does it matter how you prefer to learn it, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think the how is one aspect of this. And then the other, I think, is you indicated creativity. So for me, the other is the what. So right now, I think we have people who are producing replications or memorizing information. And that's historically been one of the ways that we test young people, or we assess if somebody's learned something. Can you remember? Can you replicate something that you learned? Can you memorize something and fill in a box or check a box or write a paragraph or a sentence that gives a definition of something? But the places that are really exciting are, how do you produce your own knowledge, right? How do you create and be an innovator and sort of a leader of your own learning?
Yeah, you get to your first job and they say, okay, we are here to revolutionize the system of whatever. So how do we do it? I'm like, I don't know. My whole life you taught me to follow the rules and learn this, and now you're asking me to change it upside down. So knowing these current limitations, how would Web3 increased opportunity to learn more and better?
Yeah, so great. I'm going to break it down just slightly, so I'll go back. So Web1 is essentially sort of, we can think of this as like, you know, you are receiving knowledge or sort of getting information. And if we think about Web2, it's a little bit more of a bi-directional experience. And so we had online education sort of starting in Web2. And there's still a little bit more of the kind of transfer of knowledge or some of that facilitation.
Like Udemy, Coursera, and all those.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then I think Web3 really offers kind of an opportunity for groundbreaking new exploration. And so, for example, there are ways to learn to earn is an opportunity. There are ways to...
Ooh, oh, that sounds exciting. Tell me more about
metaverse.
It.
The metaverse. Learn to earn is an opportunity in education, for example, could offer, you know, and again, some of these things are sort of in their beginning stages. So there are some companies that are proof of learn and opportunities, local
that
companies here that are Trodan, who are thinking about, like, how do you invite people to learn about particular subjects and earn, for example, tokens when they contribute to other people's learning as a mentor, for example, or they produce some of their own content.
Like, we can still dream of becoming an astronaut, but NASA can get directly involved in it, right? Like, you want to become an astronaut? This is the amount of tokens you have to get in your lifetime at school. When you get to that level, you take the test, and you're welcome, right? Like, it helps you achieve your dream, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a real...
That's my limited...
Well, and yeah, I think that you. That could be a possibility. And I think given the, you know, given blockchain technology, we have more opportunities now to validate or verify somebody's sort of credentials. So if we think of blockchain as kind of a ledger where each kind of learning experience has its own unique identification, you could get an NFT for that, for example. And so that could be a like proof of attendance at a particular conference. It could be that you took a particular course. And as you engage from like kindergarten through, you know, grade 20 or older, you can be accumulating your verifications or your certifications or your credentials. And it doesn't have to be, for example, when we think about like location and geography, like another sort of groundbreaking opportunity that Web3 provides would be, for example, if I'm interested in studying, maybe it's science, but I want to take a course at MIT and I want to take a course at Berkeley and I'm really interested in a course at Stanford offered by a particular professor. So there could be even in Web3 kind of fractionalized opportunities to buy into courses across universities and accumulate credentials.
Would that require a sort of reshaping of the educational system? Like, because, you know, you get the degree from this university, from this faculty. That would require universities to work together, right?
It would.
And are they open to that?
Well, I mean, it's one of the things that I think when we think about decentralization and we think about the way that Web3 potentially invites more collaboration, I mean, it would require a tremendous shift in like the way that current university structures are set up. But I think we're seeing some of those like beginning stages of this, even with things like Coursera or places where you can have different people who are creating courses and giving people opportunities to pursue, you know, study. And I think we can see more of that. Again, do I think this is going to happen in the next like 5 years? No. But like futures thinking, I think it could be a way for less of a centralized kind of university system and more of an opportunity for education to be spread across different nodes for people to really pursue things that they're interested in learning and develop their sort of transcript or credentials in various ways.
Could teachers potentially start their own thing like this?
Yeah. So, I mean, a really exciting, I think, opportunity in Web3 is also around the kind of decentralization of learning. So, educators right now, oftentimes, you're sort of limited in your geographic space. You might have a chat room or something that you're in or that you participate in or sort of a professional learning community that you come around. But it's hard for me, for example, to learn from like really good practices that are happening in maybe another location. And so we're seeing now companies like K20 Educators, Ed3DAO, a few other places that are really bringing together educators across the space converging in like one area to think about like what are the best practices that I can put into place for education? How can I use the metaverse to engage my students or engage in gamification? And so I think those things are really cool possibilities for to catalyze learning, both for educators and then for educators to bring these transferable skills back to their classrooms.
I don't know. Paid to learn sounds amazing. Like, that's what I would be. In my breaks, I'd be doing pay to play and then go back to pay to learn. That sounds like, because, you know, the UN had this week a summit on transforming education. They were like, what do we do to get children to learn when there's 200 million, 280 million people or children in the world who don't have any access to education, blah, blah, blah. my question now is, do they have access to a phone? If they have access to a phone, then you can get education through that phone. It's not that kids don't want to study. They like to study, as long as it's a little better than some sort of punishment, right? Because I thought of school as something that I have to do regardless of what I want. It was no fun, all pain, and then you have to come home with these great marks. But if we really would want to revolutionize this field, and we want to be increasing the amount of children that are educated, just let them play, right?
Well, I mean, I love this because to me, like, real learning happens in play, and it happens when we're engaged. And I mean this, like, you're engaged sort of physically, you're engaged mentally, you're engaged on like an emotional level. And I see this now with young children, you know, even my my nephew, who isn't afraid of failing when he's playing a game, because you are like, okay, now I want to try it again. I want to relearn and I want to sort of try that. But it's a different story when you are trying to learn how to read and stumbling over letters and really struggling.
You feel embarrassed.
It's like, oh gosh, right, I didn't get it right, and I'm saying this out loud. And I don't think we have the same sort of grace or the same sort of kind of gamification that takes place when students have an opportunity to learn in different ways about things that they care about.
Do you know if anyone's implementing this?
There certainly are organizations now, ones that I know are in the United States. Stimuli does some really interesting work around AR and VR in the metaverse and gamification. So that's a company that I know that's doing this work. Victory XR at like the higher ed level is doing work, again, sort of VR and AR opportunities. I think they're still fairly limited access, because some of those require different equipment and different tools that, for example, in the United States, like public education might not have a lot of the funding for. So I do think there are still issues around access.
Yeah, some fields that off the top of my head is medicine and engineering would be amazing, right? For VR learning. You can just, you don't need people to do your errors on, or buildings that will break if you put a beam in the wrong place. You can just let them play with it.
Well, and there are organizations that are actually doing, in grade school, one of the requirements for us was to dissect a frog. And there are organizations that are doing that now virtually, and so using like
so
AR,
the frogs
and
are
VR,
like, yeah.
So it's like, save a frog,
yeah.
Save a frog, still learn.
So how can this blockchain-based data? Because right now we're in kind of a phase where we'd like to collect data, right? Facebook makes money off of it. Meta makes money off of it. All the big companies make money off of it. But now they're talking about education through data. How can we use this? What data points would we need? And how hard would it be to implement this into changing? Like, you'd need a visionary, right? You'd need a chief of education in the country to be like, okay, we have 50 terabytes of data on what children want. Let's compile it and make, like, how does it work exactly?
Yeah, this is interesting. So I think one of the things that I see in education is that there are currently kind of Web 2 versions of this that exist. So for example, there are digital portfolios that students can compile and put together that shows, here is my, you know, here's my work, and it can be a series of best work, or it can be a series of like drafts that show like I'm making progress towards something. We also have competency-based learning, so where students are hitting particular like learning standards and being able to demonstrate that they hit these particular competencies. And then we also have some schools and universities that do offer, for example, like a digital transcript. So I think about MIT, which offers a digital transcript and has actually for the last couple of years. So you can see some like, you know, nascent pockets of this where
they might not even know what it is, right?
They're like, here are some things that are happening. Now, if we think about this and like what the evolution of that looks like toward Web 3, you can imagine, like you're indicating, there could be a like, hey, let's lay out a vision, and this vision can be like a national vision, but you know, certainly it could happen at a local or even a school-based level. And for like, you know, what's a portrait of a graduate? And that portrait of a graduate can include, you know, various credentials, it can include various experiences, and those could be formal, those could be informal experiences. And
you could have like a demo reel of your school experience,
yeah,
right?
I mean, and you could, and then using the blockchain, that sort of ledger, and having these unique identification like NFTs that are validating that you had that learning experience or that you were able to build the skills needed in order to, like, for example, like demonstrate sort of mastery of something, your portfolio could essentially include that accumulation of having met these standards and competencies, and the collective sort of, like, you know, you think of the blockchain literally as a chain. So that collective sort of chain of achievement that a young person could accumulate can serve as your, like, digital transcript, you know, whether that's for, like, career opportunities or career pathways.
It's really cool. Like, let me airdrop you my history real quick.
Right. And it's validated. Well, you know, you mentioned, like, LinkedIn profiles earlier, and somebody told me the other day that, like, you know, LinkedIn profiles are sort of historically thought of as, like, oh, well, people are lying on those.
Or, yes, you complicated know, words.
These aren't validated. Yeah. And so, you know, so this really gives an opportunity for us to verify or validate that.
How would we validate it? How would it work? So let's say just because I attended this one course does not mean that I really know what to do. Like, if they try to teach me something, maybe I didn't get it. How do you validate not just the presence there, but the knowledge itself? Is it possible in any way?
Well, I mean, imagine now, you know, if you were, we talked earlier about, like, you know, science or medicine or something and being able to use AR and VR. So think about medicine. How do you verify whether a doctor, like, has the ability to perform an actual surgery? Well, you don't sort of just say, like, oh,
nowadays
yeah,
it's complicated.
Let's check the box, right? Or, like, oh, I read a really good book, so I'm sure that I can remove your appendix. No, what you actually do is you have somebody demonstrate that proficiency or demonstrate that skill. And so I think there can be, you know, even now, sort of various layers of the I attended a conference versus the I'm able to sort of demonstrate that I've, like, mastered
the different classes
skill.
Of this.
Right. And that could be, and that could be potentially through, like, VR, AR experiences.
Or just like gaming, like, you got the bronze medal for attending this. Yeah. You get the silver for answering some of the questions.
You've gotten to level 15, right? I mean, so I think, you know, we have ways that we can do this that would make it, you know, certainly a lot more valid than others, right? Like, sort of, here's my real evidence of learning versus evidence of, like, having attended something.
One of the things, maybe it's not related, but one of the things I've, because I'm a big sci-fi fan, I spoke to Michael about it, is there's a current right now in sci-fi literature called Lit RPG. So it's a very weird book that you're reading and the character progresses while you read. So it gains new levels and it's learning to do new things. And the books are giant. So, like, I haven't read, I've only started one, but when I see the amount of Lit RPG on Audible, I'm just like, wait a minute. You can play games and you advance in level, or if it's like an online multiplayer game, you buy different skins, or you read a book and you gain new levels as you read. Same thing, I'm guessing, could be applied to education, right? Like, that's why I asked you, like, how would we demonstrate this? Mm-hmm. Like, you advance, and while you advance, like, you want to read the next chapter. Here's a little test for you. And then you get this token for it.
Yes.
Like, that'd, I mean, be really,
that,
right?
I love that idea. You should do that. Something it actually makes me think, though, is, I mean, so what you said there kind of sparked for me this notion of, like, also around, like, artificial intelligence, which is we're also seeing sort of lots of evolution around, whether it's in, like, NFTs or it's in, you know, education. And so the notion that, like, something can't, machines can learn, mm-hmm. or we can, like, help to, like,
hopefully we can,
right.
too.
Right. And that, like, you know, somebody is, like, being able to progress or, like, developing different skills. I mean, I think that's also another sort of aspect of this kind of learning where, like, a character, you know, you might be able to, like, train your character.
You live in the metaverse, right? And your character becomes smarter. So even if you don't really like learning, your character might, right? Because we all like to play actors.
Yes, that's true.
But in your activity, in your experience, how many teachers in the US or around the world are starting to open up to this decentralized, revolutionary type of learning? Do you get a lot of raised eyebrows?
I think that the pandemic provided a little bit of a catalyst for more people to feel comfortable in exploring technology, because it forced us to do that. And by that I mean, you know, most teachers had been very comfortable or confident in teaching in a classroom. And then for, you know, almost 2 years, we had to pivot and shift and embrace online learning. And so at least there was like more of an introduction of like tools of technology. And I think teachers learning that there are ways to engage young people virtually or online, and ways that can still be, you know, still kind of
where they can feel added value to it, too, right?
I mean, like that students are actually learning, that they're engaged, that they're, you know, producing something, that they're building skills.
Because online learning is boring.
Yeah, I mean, for a lot of young people, you know, I mean, because there's such a social aspect to learning. But when you think about, for example, like being in a room in your avatar and like actually doing something with other people, you know, there is still a little bit of that. And young people young people I talk to, they don't differentiate between like in real life and online.
Really?
It's not like, you know, oh, I'm online.
We know the difference because we grew up with the right? internet, right?
You know, like young people are like, no, I'm just, you know, that's all. It's all sort of my real life. You know, I'm just doing this now, or I'm doing this in this way. And, you know, but they sort of, these spaces are so much more permeable for young people, I think, than, yes, for people like us who, like, didn't grow up like that. So I think, you know, I think teachers are more open to it, but I do
because
think,
they were kind of forced, right?
Yes,
they
were,
understood.
Right,
the,
and mm-hmm. forced into this. And so I think what we're probably seeing are two things. One, there's like the, like often happens, now that you had it, there's the rejection of it, right? Like, oh my gosh, I didn't like online learning. It really stifled me. It was really hard. I didn't find it productive. You know, my students didn't learn. There's a lot of talk about learning loss. But I also think there's a segment of educators that feels the opposite, which is, hey, I saw possibilities. I was able to try some new things. We could explore different ways of learning, a different modality. And there are lots of students for whom, like, they had increased access because it was online or because it was virtual, or young people felt more comfortable potentially taking risks or being themselves in a space where they could be an avatar, or in a space where they didn't have to be, or they could be a little bit more introverted and just use a chat box, for example, to share their thinking.
Do you think a company such as, I don't know, Meta, because it's so big, mm-hmm. would ever be interested in education? So because my guess is for a school it would be first of all really complicated, but second of all really expensive to make a a virtual school experience. Mm-hmm. But if a giant corporation like Meta, which has the resources and probably the will because they're so obsessed with metaverse now, would they make this worldwide available school class where the teacher can just, you know, like in, I guess, Sims, where you can just, I'll put this over there and we'll study this from over here and our break will be over there. Like, would this centralized, because, you know, Meta would serve the environment, but then you use it however you want. Mm-hmm. Do you think that would be one of the aspects of this future AR, VR learning experience or no?
Do you think that?
I think it would be cool though. Because in a country with a small budget like ours,
yes.
I don't know, let's say it costs $100,000 to make that.
Yes.
That's a lot of money. So a school would never be able to afford it.
Right.
But if it's like, remember when WordPress came out?
Yes.
Or Blogspot?
Yes.
It's really complicated to make a website. You have to buy a domain, you have to buy hosting, you have to buy, like, it's complicated.
Mm.
Or you can just register an account with WordPress and there you go. You get all that for you.
Right.
So in this case, because Michael said it too, there's going to be aspects of it that need to be centralized.
Yeah.
Mainly because not a lot of people will know how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you can do it at the click of a button or like an app on your phone, I want to be seeing Harvard. And you get Harvard on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
Then, am I talking silly right now?
No, I mean, I think it's a possibility. I mean, whether it's Meta or there are other organizations, I do think that there are folks who will design and create kind of like prefab, right? Like prefabricated like
environments
that people can access. And for the reason that you said, that like not everybody has the time, the inclination, the money, the skill set to be able to do that. And so I could certainly see that happening as a more accessible way for like, you know, for schools to be able to access that.
Would that also be decentralized? Like, I know it's, I said it's centralized, but mm-hmm. would that be a part of the whole decentralization of education, or would it be a remnant of the current era?
Well, I mean, I think that it would be an improvement on the current era in that, you know, for example, like you indicated earlier, I think, you know, if you are interested in, you know, whether it's like, let's pretend you were interested in art and you wanted to go visit the Louvre in Paris, right? So there could be a like centralized way in which you can like use your kind of like metaverse and put on your like virtual reality, and you could actually feel as though you were walking through. Now, we don't have to create like, every school doesn't have to create their own, right, like Louvre in Paris mm-hmm. to be able to do this. But there are some like centralized ways that we can do that. And I think it could be the same with other environments. You could go on an archaeological dig potentially, and somebody could create
so cool.
this one.
And you get a mummy.
you could imagine those sorts of things, right? Like what are some of those kind of like in real life experiences that we often don't have the opportunity to engage in because of the kind of physical or geographical limitations that we have.
I just imagined myself winning a Tutankhamun NFT from the British Museum. Like, here, you own Tutankhamun
and
now.
Look at you. Here's your like gold pharaoh.
That's so weird. Okay, we have the teachers part, we have the schools part, the budget part, the centralized part of it. And the children are also very open to it, right? Because you said to them, it makes no difference.
I think.
What about their parents? Us? Yeah. Like, I'm 20 years from now, I will probably be a lot more conservative in my views. I'll be like, this virtual thing is crap. Back in my day, it was so useful. I could go to class. But now all you do is sit in front of the TV and blah, blah, blah. Like, how would we treat, or how do you currently engage with teachers or with parents that are, say, not as excited about it? What are their concerns?
This is so interesting. What do you see now with parents, for example? Like, if when you see parents of young children, whose children might be on their phones or who might be on their tablets, how do you see parents reacting to that?
As a parent of a 3-year-old, that all he says when he comes home is watch in bed. All I can say is, this is really annoying, because, like, I get it. I come home from work. Sometimes I want to watch a show, have a drink, or play a game, right? Mm. Because, I grew up playing games, so I like playing games, even if I'm a grown-up. So I tell him, hey, you can go do your own thing. That's how it started, actually. I was thinking, what should I give him that would give him a time to enjoy and myself? So we gave him YouTube. Mm. And now he has a tablet, a computer, and another tablet, which, depending on the battery level, he gets to watch and engage with. And he knows, like, the weirdest thing he watches is this Japanese, I think he's Japanese or Indonesian, guy's YouTube, where he's playing with dinosaurs. Mm. All you see is hands and dinosaurs. And he's talking a language I don't know. But my son is having so much fun with it. So I get jealous, right? Because he is having fun. I'm done with mine. I want to engage with him. And he's like, nope, I want to watch in bed. This is what I want to do. So my concern is, when children would find studying or like interacting with their peers so engaging online, like, you remember Yahoo Messenger or all those?
Sure.
My mom was yelling at me like, stop talking with people you don't know. Mm. Like, it's a normal reaction. I'm afraid parents will be jealous, right? Mm-hmm. Because for us, at some point, we will get where it's too complicated, right? Like, my mom probably doesn't know what Bitcoin is. Same thing in 20 years, like Mike said, I don't know what's going to happen in 20 years. Something in 20 years will be too complicated for me to understand. And all I will see is my son wearing stupid glasses that he doesn't ever get out of, right? So that's my concern. I think that should be one of the aspects to try to figure out before the problem happens. Rather than when, what's it called? Doomsday comes in Terminator.
I mean, it's such an interesting and complex question, because, so I'll break this down in a couple of ways. So number one, right, I think there were parents who likely had a similar reaction when like the television came out, and all of a sudden their kids were watching television shows. And then I think what we saw with, for example, like a lot more technology when it was like, so, and now like social media, we have kids who are, you know, who are on their phones quite often.
TikToking.
Right. Whether it's TikTok or it's Snapchat or Instagram or sort of any of the things that young people are into. And I think like anything else, right, like using that too much or like spending too much time and not enough in like sort of in real life situations can potentially be, detrimental for people. And I think that research has indicated that, you know, like I talked about, systems are designed to get the outcome that mm-hmm. they get. You know, our phones, and whether it's like Instagram or sort of the endless scroll that you can do on any of these, like those were designed to keep people looking at their phones. They were designed
but now
to keep people, right?
You can have your phone not let you do it.
Yes. You can put and it some doesn't controls work. On.
I have a friend who I caught him. Like, he opened Instagram and the message popped saying, like, you exceeded your time. And I'm like, does that work? He's like, no. So he just stopped that.
No.
And he went back into like, yeah.
Yeah.
So
well,
yeah.
And it's interesting because, I mean, so I think, for me, number one, right? Like, I think we're seeing this happen historically. Like, it's not new for this sort of generation. And it won't be new in 20 yeah. years. And it wasn't new maybe like 10 years ago or 15 years ago. It might have been a different medium, whether it was like Pac-Man, you know, that you were playing on Atari with your joystick, or it was, some other kind of like social media now. And so I think that's going to happen. And I do think, though, that, you know, as somebody who is like very much an outdoors person, I think it's important to like put your phone down and also have experiences that are like beyond just your screen experience. And it's not to say screen experiences can't mimic and feel as though they were in real life. I think lots of them can. And I think, again, that's an accessibility option that like walking out your door doesn't necessarily get you the same place or the same geographic expanse or the same exploration that you might get online. Or in like a metaverse
scenario. I mean, the game's graphics are pretty good nowadays.
I mean, that's
true. Yeah.
But I also feel like it's important for us to, you know, also continue to do things that, you know, kind of push us outside of some of these, you know, some of our screens and some of these, which are still, you know, can
still
have
boundaries. You think we'd have
to
enforce limits? So I don't know if you've seen or read Ready Player One.
Oh, yeah.
Remember when he was like forced to stop, so he can, or even in The Matrix, forced to stop so you can eat or use the shower?
Sure,
or,
right.
Do you think we'd have to enforce some limits? Like the game or the school or whatever, your date even. Mm. I think that was a Mirror episode, right? With the dates.
It might have been.
Yeah, it's like 24-hour to date or something. So you're like, okay, but that's enough. 24 hours, you're just reality right now.
Mm.
Would that be dystopian?
I mean, you know, it's I don't,
because that would make it into a drug.
I was like,
right?
It might be a little like that. Might be a little dystopian, but I think that happens now in various ways anyway. Right, where like you as a parent, I'm sure have some like enforced, you know, okay, now you have to be off your screen, right? Like this is now like us
big
time
tantrum.
Or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Like, and but I also see like, you know, working with young people now, and particularly young people who are looking to like pursue career pathways. In workspaces, you know, and again, maybe workspaces in 30 years are going to look totally different than they do now, and we're all going to be virtual, and it'll be lots, you know, there'll be lots of like sort of differences. But in current workspaces or in current interactions, you are looking somebody in the eye. There's a level of communication that's necessary. There's a, like, people need a sense of belonging and developmental relationships to feel strongly connected. And those are the kinds of things that actually help you build confidence. And they're the kinds of things that help you, sort of building skills. And like getting feedback from people. And again, I think you can do a lot of these things virtually. A lot of them can happen. But there's also something, the kind of like intangible and like the hug.
So on,
right?
on a deep
really
level,
important.
We will strive for this physical connection with things, right?
Well, and I think you see more people, you know, a lot of people are doing that now anyway, as a, you know, as a reaction to so much of the online time that we have. It's like,
wasn't it because we were just stuck in the house rather than, because if we had really cool VR, AR stuff, I don't think we would have missed seeing a concert if we have so much stuff to do. It was more like,
possible.
I'm stuck in this Zoom meeting for 6 hours every day. I just want to jump out of my window because of it. Like, I think, wasn't that more the issue?
I mean, I think a lot of people still feel that way. True.
Yeah. For teachers in here or anywhere else in the world that might listen, what advice would you give to try to make this transition to Web3, to start on this path?
I mean, for me, it starts with being curious. And so, an exploration. And so what I would do is I would encourage people to go online and to check out some of the existing companies and platforms and articles and resources that exist around education. And see like what sparks your curiosity and what's something that like you connect with or what's something that you could potentially try out in your own classroom that might be even like one tiny step. And so I would just really start with like a, you know, what's your like one step that you can take?
How to make an NFT.
You know, right. It could be how to make an NFT. It could be, I'm going to read an article about what Web3 is in education. And, like,
don't read
get
the
some
New York
ideas.
Times.
Yeah. So that's what I would encourage people to do.
That's a really good advice. Be curious, because I remember how I got into liking to read. I hated it, right? Because if you don't grow up in an environment where you're encouraged to read, but where it's more like a, you have to read because I said so, or because you'll be stupid and you'll end up just washing, I don't know, windows for a living. No one wants to do that, right? So you have this huge pressure. But we had a teacher in sixth grade who was like, you know, we're supposed to study, it was a Romanian literature. So we're supposed to study this poet. I don't think you guys are interested in him. How about Harry Potter? Have you ever read Harry Potter? And the whole class just got immediately obsessed with it. And after reading that book, reading was an enjoyable experience for us. So any other book he gave us afterwards, we're like, okay, cool. He gave us Harry Potter. Maybe this is just as cool as that. So curiosity is definitely like, and admitting that something might be wrong, right?
Yeah.
Like if you're 12, you don't need to read Mark Twain if you don't want to. If you're interested in reading, I don't know how Minecraft works. Like you're really interested in, it's still literature.
Yeah.
Right? But
I mean, I 100% agree. And I think that there should be lots more choice and students should have opportunities to follow interests, passions. And I mean, that those are the kinds of things that serve as like entryways into, you know, like exploring multitudes of other things. But like, first, get hooked, right? Like, first, be curious. And you see it happen with kids all the time. Like, you get in a flow state and the kids can just do like, oh, I'm going to watch this ant like walk on the ground for like an hour. Look at this. Isn't this the most fascinating thing? Or like the, I love this, you know, graphic novel that, right? Like, I mean, and I think those are great. And those are the kinds of, those, that's actually learning. You know, that, like, that's authentic learning.
I don't know if you've ever heard or seen the craziest thing the Norwegian TV ever did. So their national TV channel, which obviously anywhere in the world is not really popular. They, I think it was 15 or some years ago, they decided to show the whole trip of a train from one part of Norway to the other. Nothing. You just see train tracks the whole way. I think it was like a 7-hour show. And it was the most popular thing ever in Norway's television. So 4 million people watched that thing and they were calling each other. Did you see this? Watch this. So this makes me like excited about where we can get by showing people. Then they kind of upgraded the level and then they took the longest ferry route around Norway. I think it was like 27 hours. And they showed that too. And everyone that lived along the route would come out with flags and like messages. And there was a funny video of a guy like knocking himself off the boat or something. Like it became viral immediately. So I'm really excited about where this is going. I just hope we find these safeguards, I guess, where both the parents and the teachers and the pupils can say, okay, but this is enough. Let's go back to the outside, see a sunset and stuff. Meg, thank you very much. I know it was more like a conversation rather than an interview.
Yeah, that's fun.
I really love picking your brain. And I'm glad people like you help turn boring linear education into something fun and something where the entire planet can just like explore, because we're a race of explorers, right? Yeah. The first guy that was like, what's outside the cave? That's what we should do the whole time.
Right. And like, this is sort of the, you know, I think the Shackleton, you know, like, why did you climb the mountain? And it's like, because it was there.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. I just want to see what's there. Thank you for coming. Hopefully, just like I told Michael, you'll be here a few years from now. We can talk about where education, got at that point.
Oh, dynamite. Yeah. Let's do it.
Eu aici încheie episodul acesta. Sper că v-a plăcut abordarea noastră de educație prin prisma Web3. Vă reamintesc că puteți să deveniți susținători și să investiți într-o presă liberă și interesantă din Moldova, cum este Agora, și acest podcast este realizat cu ajutorul Agenției Elvețienii pentru Dezvoltare și Cooperare. Eu sunt Alex Curdila și acesta a fost podcastul Prepare for Future.